Welcome to Soundbreaker. On today's episode, we're talking to Jackson Abaduto, who is a groundbreaker in the music industry. Thanks for joining us. And for our listeners who might not be familiar with you, could you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Bob. I'm excited to be here. My name is Jackson Abaduto. I am a music attorney specializing in music and technology currently at Granderson Desrochers in private practice. I've been in the industry for quite a while now, and I've been at this job for about a year. So I'm excited to talk to you about my experiences.
Great. Well, first, great to have you here. Is it possible that you can take us back to your early, teenage years or childhood kind of? What got you interested in the music business? Was it family? Was it groups? Or was it just you were part of a band? Whatever your story is that kind of led you to that path where you're in now.
Sure. So I think my love for music and my love for the music industry are kind of intertwined. I was a big fan of early 2000s hip hop and a little bit of pop punk at that time. But I really started to dig into the music industry when I would go to, at that time, Barnes & Noble and read Billboard and kind of like try to understand what the inner workings were of the music industry. Who were the people that were actually behind the songs and the records that I was listening to? That grew into me and some friends kind of establishing a little garage-based record label where we would have some of our friends from the neighborhood record either songs or verses or whatever. And at the time, we would even do collaborations with people across the country on MySpace and other early social media platforms. So I was not a musician at all, but I would kind of like orchestrate the business side of things with a lot of my friends who were musicians or at least aspiring musicians. Did that during high school. So by the time I got to college, I really knew that I wanted to be in the business side of the music industry. I went to college in Chicago at Loyola University Chicago, and I did pretty much every internship that anyone in Chicago could do. I interned at record labels,
interesting
management companies, publishing companies, booking agencies. Ended up doing a few years working in, for Grammy U at the Recording Academy. And I was a Grammy U rep in Chicago. And what that allowed me to do was kind of see like a, overarching view of the different types of professionals that were in the music industry and also make a lot of connections. So after my time there, I was able to create a friendship with my counterpart at the time in Los Angeles. So when I moved to Los Angeles, I was, hooked up by him to have an interview at Universal Publishing Group, and got an entry level job there. And that's where things kind of like just accelerated for me.
Great. You know, it's funny, you mentioned something, you said garage house, and I haven't heard that term for many years. You know, I started in the music business myself. This interview is not about me, about you, but I'm just saying. And one of the first things I learned back in the day when we were selling vinyl, when I started my record label, garage house. And you have to be a true connoisseur of house music or somebody who really grew up in it to know that term. A lot of people wouldn't know what a garage house. Yes.
That was one of our, that was one of the genres that we
dabbled. Yes, yes.
Not very too interesting. Well,
yes. I started with a lot of garage house music when I started distributing. I remember
and we
back
actually
in the day.
Had, the label was actually in the garage too. So it was, we had a lot of.
That's what the whole term came from, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah. And Chicago was the house for, they call it Chicago house. And that's what a lot of the house music came. A lot of house heads, the big ones came out of Chicago to begin with.
Exactly. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yes. Funny. Small world. At Universal Music Publishing Group, what digital rights challenges did you identify that were impacting the broader music industry?
Yeah, so that was a really interesting time. I was at Universal starting in 2012. So that's not to say that was the beginning of, all of the user-generated content platforms, but it was certainly the time at which, services like Facebook, YouTube, Snap, right? Like they all really started to take off and to be a integral part of the music industry. So at the time, I was really interested in making sure that our songwriters were able to identify and be properly compensated for the use of their content in user generated content. Meaning, you know, posts on YouTube or Facebook or a similar platform that incorporated that artist or songwriter's songs. That was a time where I think Universal was a little bit ahead of the others because it was still a new thing for a lot of songwriters and they didn't really understand that this is a significant or maybe the most significant source of income that they could have. And the leadership at that time was really interested in exploring different pathways to monitoring that content and monetizing that content. And I was lucky enough to be in a group of people at the time that were able to kind of take charge and make sure that our songwriters were claiming that content and monetizing it. So that really laid the foundation for a lot of what I was going to do in the rest of my career since then, just because it gave me a really firm understanding of how user-generated content and online rights work in the music industry, and also just the intersection of that and the artist-songwriter contracts, right? Like, how is a songwriter paid on content that is exploited on YouTube or Facebook? And how can we as a music industry make sure that they're really recognizing that revenue and finding it? And as publishers and record labels, those entities are, of course, stewards of that type of exploitation and need to make sure that their songwriters are paid. So that really gave me an understanding of that element of the digital music landscape.
Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, would you say that, you know, how old is this whole thing with collecting, publishing, and mechanical? I'm sure it's been around from the beginning of, you know, music, but when artists were aware of it, like how long ago you think? Was it like 30 years, 20 years?
Or well, a little I think bit artists more? And songwriters have been aware of the fact that there's income streams on publishing, if that's what you're referring to, for quite some time. And I think that that goes back, you know, at least 100 years to the 1909 Copyright Act.
Yeah, when it started, yes. Correct.
Things of that nature. But I think in terms of really being able to exploit cover songs in a creative, interesting way, I really think that the benchmark is YouTube, right? It wasn't before then that people were really seeing secondary revenue streams on content that had been previously released by amateur users, right? Like, of course, I could always go on to Spotify before YouTube, or I could release a CD before that, or vinyl.
Yeah.
Whatever, and I could always cover a song, and the songwriter is always going to get paid on that. And that goes back, you know, again, 100 years. But when we're talking about the ability for literally anyone to take 5 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute and a half of a song, post it on YouTube, post it on TikTok, I think that's a relatively new thing. And it's also a very important component of where the industry is going when we're talking about fan-generated content and the proliferation of, you know, bedroom creators, right? Like 15-year-old me would have loved this time when I can be in my garage making money off of cover songs. And the artists that I'm covering would also enjoy that too. So I think it's a really interesting time for cover artists and users and the songwriters.
Yeah, YouTube did open a lot of revenue doors for a lot of artists. It did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. While you're at YouTube, could you detail a particular licensing deal you worked on and its significance for the music publishing sector?
Sure. So I can't share specifics about any of that, of course, but I worked on
deals
across the music publishing industry while at YouTube. And that really taught me how to be meticulous, detail oriented, because there was a lot of scrutiny on deals. You know, when you're talking about a platform that is arguably the most complex, influential, intricate platform on the world, deals need to be vetted appropriately. And you always need to make sure that you have sign off from the appropriate stakeholders. So I think that being able to dig into issues that I had been familiar with at Universal Publishing, but to do so in a way that was a lot more intense and a lot more, it was a lot more of a deep dive than I think anyone would imagine. Really made me realize the inner workings of a complex service like this, and also the benefit that that service could have to music publishers and the songwriting industry. So I think the biggest thing that I took away from that was just realizing that YouTube was a partner for the music industry, trying to generate revenue for them, and working with a lot of great partners along the way at various publishing companies. It gave me a view that was not so myopic. You know, like working at a music company, you kind of learn what that company's points are, what their, for lack of a better word, but what their issues are that they always bring up, you know? Mm-hmm. But I think being able to see the same from a lot of other music companies was helpful for me to gain a bigger understanding, a better understanding of the larger publishing industry.
Great. I mean, Universal, YouTube, and now we're going to talk about GDR, which is the law firm that you're with. And transitioning from YouTube to GDR, how have you observed the digital media landscape shift in terms of music rights and technology?
Yeah, so the firm that I'm at right now, Granderson Des Rochers, what we do, what I focus on specifically is new media and technology and kind of the intersection of that with the music industry. So working, you know, backwards and leaving YouTube, transitioning to this job is interesting because at YouTube, you're hyper-focused on YouTube. You're hyper-focused on, you know, the most important, most influential service probably on the planet. And you spend all day, every day dealing with YouTube. At GDR, we have myriad clients that range from startups to large tech companies. So you kind of have to shift your focus from, you know, hour to hour or even minute to minute, which is a fantastic challenge. And I'm able to meet a lot of founders of startups that are at a relatively early stage. So I'm able to take, you know, the lessons that I learned at YouTube and kind of apply them to help our clients either launch their business, sustain their business, or pivot on their strategy. And the other thing that it allows me to do is see trends kind of at a very early stage, right? Like these clients that we work with, a lot of them have amazing ideas and fantastic vision. And we see them before, you know, the public sees them, or we see them before even the music industry sees them. So it's interesting to be able to see these, you know, AI, blockchain, whatever companies they are, come to you at an earlier stage. And I think the biggest observation that I've made is that it's a really interesting, exciting time in the music tech space, because there's a lot of people that are trying to launch companies, and a lot of people that have successful companies in this business.
Interesting. Regarding a very timely subject, AI generated music, what are the key legal considerations you're addressing, you know, to shape the industry or to shape industry standards and protect intellectual property?
Yeah, I think this is obviously the most timely subject that we have in the music technology copyright space right now. And there's really not a lot of guidance on this at the moment. I think very high level, the important thing is to make sure that, you know, companies and creators can coexist in whatever economy results from, you know, the upcoming or soon to come legislation on this. Obviously, the most important issues when you talk about the legal copyright aspects of it are you training on copyrighted material? If so, does that training require a license from the rights holders? That has not yet been decided, at least, you know, in the United States. And then looking at the output, right? Like, is the output that you create from the copyrighted material, or is the output that you create copyrightable? And then two, is the, if that output is copyrightable and it sounds like something else, or it looks like something else in the case of a visual image, what are the original copyright holders recourses against that? What's the recourse against that, right? Are you held to the same standards as you would in any other case? Or is there...
Is it going to be treated, do you think, not to interrupt, but is it going to be treated like a cover song? Because who's going to get the publishing, the mechanical? Is this, if it's, I mean, you remember, you're creating, if the actual, you know, the training that's happening with the AI, let's say for 100,000 songs, so how do you pay publishing if there's, let's say, you release 10 songs out of that training. Let's say whatever you created, but you release 10 songs of that genre. Mm-hmm. And how do you, and it doesn't sound the same, but it's in our day-to-day life, we will say inspired, but in the tech world, they might say AI tech, well, more trained on it. And that's what they extracted. They came up with something different. It doesn't sound like it, but we're inspired by it. But then what happened to the, who collects the publishing? Who's the writer in that case? Right. Is it the owner of the AI tool that owns it? You know, that created the, you know.
You're hitting on all the open questions, Bob. And I think
it is difficult. It is very, intricate, like really, you know, like, okay, there's 100,000 writers there that we trained on. So what do we pay? We take a song and we split the publishing on to all of these writers and all of these composers.
So I think one side to take would be, right, if that is the case, if this AI tool was trained on all this copyrighted material, then regardless of what it spits out, the rights holders might say, we need to be compensated for that. Our songwriters, our artists need to be compensated for that. I think the other side of the coin is that you should really be focusing on the output kind of in a vacuum, right? Like if there's no training, there's no copyright license required for training, and the training is just like me or you listening to the radio, we're just learning things, and then we may or may not be influenced by them, and we spit out something that is, you know, not similar in any way to any of the stuff that we've heard before, at least from a copyright law perspective, then I think some tech companies might argue you don't need to be compensating the original artists or rights holders for that. So I think those are the two extreme sides, and I'm not sure exactly where this is going to end up. It will probably maybe be somewhere in the middle. Who knows? But it's certainly an issue that, you know, is at the forefront of literally everyone's mind in the music industry.
You know, I thought about it for a minute once, and I said, is it going to be like, you know, how is it you have to pay ASCAP and BMI a license when you own a club? Yeah. And, you know, you have to, is it going to be like a pool that where all the money comes in, you pay a license, just a one-time license fee as a AI tool, you know, music generator? I don't know.
Yeah, that's my example of looking at, you know, past precedent and frameworks to try to fit into this. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see where this all turns out.
Uh-huh. Considering your experiences across Universal, YouTube, and now GDR, what future trends do you anticipate will define the next phase of digital music rights management?
I think the most important trend and maybe concepts to consider in this is really partnership. I think for years, decades now, you know, music companies, artists, writers, tech companies have all kind of been, you know, at odds with each other. And I think now the community is waking up and realizing that all sides really need each other. Music companies need artists, tech companies need music companies and artists, and vice versa. So I think that the overarching trend really needs to be everyone working together to try to like realize the benefit for all parties. You know, I've worked on all sides of this now, and I strongly believe that everybody is trying their best to be good partners with the others. And I think sometimes, you know, media narratives kind of get out of hand, and it's, you know, pitting party A against party B, usually the music companies against the tech companies. Mm-hmm. I know that there's a lot of great people on both sides, and I think that everyone is ultimately working towards similar goals. So I'm really hopeful that in the next few years, we start to see the partnership narrative prevail.
You know, I know you're not a tech person, but somebody who worked, you know, attorney, and you worked for a record label, a major one, you worked for your social media platform. That's one of the biggest, YouTube, and now for a law firm, the law side of everything. And you're dealing with all type of kind of cases in the industry or other industries also. What do you think, in your opinion, if somebody comes to you and say, hey, Jackson, he's a certain amount of money and I'd like you to start a tech company. What's the first thing you would do to kind of you would think the music business missing or needed? Like, you know what? This is what I'm going to invest the money and what, you know, and because I know the business or the industry needs that, but nobody's touching on it.
That's a great question. I think the first thing that comes to mind is maybe a rights management company. I think music companies and tech companies obviously focus so much on data, and
Correct.
in order
Yes.
to make sure that the musicians, artists, songwriters are properly compensated, data is incredibly
Hold that
important.
thought for a second. Would you say that data is a bit of a mess? And it's always been?
I think it's a mess because it's complicated, and I think that
Yeah.
there has to be ways to streamline it. And I don't know the answer to this. This is, again, that's not my day job, but I do know that there is certainly room for other entrants in the music data space. There are times in the publishing industry, right, where there's 50 writers, 70 writers on the song when you consider samples. And of course, those issues are going to cause problems when it comes to getting those songwriters paid. When you're talking about a video or a song that's exploited billions of times on TikTok or YouTube, each percentage certainly matters a lot. So I think if I were to start a company and it was in the music tech industry, I would probably put my money to a data management company.
Data management company. Interesting. Very interesting. I mean, you had an incredible journey so far. The music industry is known for its challenges and setbacks. Can you share a difficult moment you faced and in your career, and how did you overcome it?
Sure. I think my most difficult period of my career was actually when I was in law school. I chose not to step away from my career to pursue law school. So I instead did a 4-year part-time law school program. And I was working at Universal at the time. And I think it was difficult for me, candidly, because I'm so used to being 100% focused on one thing and devoted to my career and focusing on that, 24/7, 365. During law school, I structured my days in a way so that I was working from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. and then I was driving to school and I had class from like 6 to 10. So I really had to shift my focus at that time. And of course, the world doesn't stop. The Universal job didn't stop when I was at law school, and things kept going, and I needed to find a way to be okay with that. And I think the way that I did that was really through my mentor, who's now chief counsel at Universal, allowing me to really, take the time that I needed to disconnect from that. And he reassured me that that was okay, and I needed to do that because, the next day I could dive right back in. So I was
Interesting.
thankful for him to allow me the space to do that. And it really allowed me to learn how to balance things a little bit better and compartmentalize two very important, but different things that I was dealing with at that time.
As you know, collaboration is an often key element in the music world. Could you share a memorable collaboration story or someone you worked who left an impact on you?
Sure. So I think, collaboration is important. And I think the other thing that's really important is just making connections at every stage of your career, just because you never know when those connections are going to be useful or when they're going to come up for you again. So
Correct.
in my current role at GDR, we're working with clients who sometimes need introductions to others in the music industry. And one of my favorite collaboration stories happened recently when a friend of mine that I knew at Universal had stepped into a really big role at a music rights holder. And it turned out that one of our clients wanted to work with that music rights holder. And I was able to make that connection between the two. And these two people were really not individuals with whom shared a lot in common, and I didn't ever think that my relationship with one would impact the other in any way. But I was able to make that connection, and working with both of them in different ways, I was really able to kind of like be the intermediary in those conversations that they ended up having to form, a working relationship. So that was a collaboration that really surprised me in a very positive way.
Interesting. Technology has significantly changed the music landscape. How have advancements in technology influenced your work and the music industry as a whole?
This is an interesting question because I think, technology and the emergence of it within the music industry has certainly been integral in my chosen career path. So as an attorney, that focuses mostly on technology and new media, I think I've benefited from being, coming of age in an era where this is a prevalent and prominent part of the industry. I think the more traditional path for a person within the music legal space is to become a artist or songwriter attorney, and that was certainly a path that I considered. But seeing all of the trends that were happening in the digital space during my time at Universal Publishing, I realized that there really wasn't a lot of individuals within the legal space focusing on the music and technology part. I would see, the same names come up over and over and over again, representing literally every digital music company. And that kind of inspired me to, take a left turn and focus on that, as opposed to focusing on what I initially thought that I wanted to focus on, which was, representation of artists and songwriters and that kind of thing. But I think from my perspective, technology has been incredibly important, just shaping my day-to-day life and what I do for my career.
Interesting. In your line of work, how do you stay updated, with the latest trends, innovations, changes in the industry, and how important is it to continue to learn?
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. I'm thankful that my job allows me to stay up to date on a lot of the trends. Just by nature of doing my job, I kind of have a, finger on the pulse of what's going on in the music and technology spaces. But I don't think, that's all that's necessary. I listen to podcasts like yours. I make sure that I'm always reading, digital music news, Music Business Worldwide, Billboard, all the industry trades I think are very important. As a lawyer, I need to make sure that I'm staying up to speed on current cases. So I'm making sure that I, read the latest copyright law decisions or at least summaries thereof. If there's too many of them, I just need to make sure that those things are on my radar. And then just talking to people, I think that's kind of an overlooked element of staying up to date and learning. I think just by being around people who are doing things similar to yourselves or sometimes completely at odds with what you do, it gives you a different perspective on developments in the music industry, right? Like you're going to get a different update about music, technology, and AI from somebody that works at a tech company versus someone that, is a songwriter or works at a small record label, right? So I think hearing different perspectives on industry trends is also very important. Things move faster than ever, so it's integral to advancing your career.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Yes, we are on a lot of people in the music industry's radar, Soundbreaker, and also for our listeners, please listen and watch to learn. Great, a lot of interesting guests here and a lot of information we do bring in to the industry. A lot of our listeners and viewers, Jackson, gonna be watching this episode and they're gonna be inspired by your story, and your path. Definitely your path is very interesting. And how you went in from a record label to, big major social media platform and then to a law firm. Any advice a lot of the listeners and viewers who's going to be inspired by your path and your story, to what to look for, what to watch out for, what to do, what not to do, if they decided to kind of take a similar path. As you know, our industry is full of gatekeepers. So maybe you can give them some of the knowledge and the advice that you accumulated during your journey or throughout your journey in the industry.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, well, it's a cliche, is just make good impressions on people. It's a very small industry, and I've been in it for quite some time now. And the people that were nice to me, I remember that. And the few that were not nice to me, I remember that too. Like, and I'm sure others would say similar things. You see the same people on emails that you see out at events, that you see on panels, etc. It's a very small industry, and especially when you're talking about a segment of the industry like this music tech segment that I'm in, that's a smaller segment of this already small industry. So it's really important to not only meet people, but to make good impressions, develop good relationships, just be nice to people, because 10 years from now, you might be in a position where they need your help or you need their help, or you just want to connect and you don't want to have to worry about a bridge that you burned 15 years ago.
Yes.
So correct. It's very, but I see it being more and more important every day.
Yes. Build more bridges, connect with people.
Yeah.
Yes. Those are valuable insights and very helpful for our listeners and viewers. You know, anything that you working on right now at the moment, that you want to promote, advertise, that's going to be our project, something that you want to tell every our viewers or listeners about to look for in an upcoming month or
I'll be at South by Southwest. Weeks. I'll be at South by Southwest next month. Anyone that's out there, I would love to connect with you, meet more people. Very excited to reconnect with a lot of, you know, colleagues and friends out there and just see what's going on and better understand, you know, more of these trends that we've been talking about. It's a very exciting time in the industry for sure. And, you know, I think people have been saying, you know, since I got into this, since my first job at Universal, like things at that time, you know, everyone was reeling from, you know, the decline in CD sales. And then it turned into the decline in music streaming and all of these things are cyclical. And what I found is that we're really, you know, at the start of something very interesting and important.
Yes.
I think it's a good time to be in this space. So very excited to keep meeting people and learning things.
Yeah. So if you are at South by Southwest next month, do connect with Mr. Jackson, pick his brain, ask him. He does have a lot of information and insight about the business and what's coming. So it's always great to connect with people to such great events. Absolutely. You know, such a great interview. Sadly, every good thing has to come to an end, I should say. Thank you for joining us today. And this concludes today's episode of Soundbreaker. Please make sure to follow us on social or socials with an S to stay tuned for our new episode. Thank you. And appreciate it. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure to share the Soundbreaker podcast. And if you are joining us on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to the channel. Until next time.